for Latin America, 3% of adults were using novel digital modes of payments like digital wallets, mobile money, mobile bank accounts, etc. in 2011. By 2021, this was 40%.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. It used to be that if you wanted to do business in Latin America or the Caribbean, well, you needed cash for that. Now, no longer. The remarkable rise of digital payments in the region is the topic of a new report from the Inter-American Development Bank. I spoke to its editor, Diero Vera Cosio, about the rise of digital payments, what this has done to the region's economies, and also possible lessons for policymakers in other regions. So, Diego, how fast has the adoption of digital payments been in the region?
It has gone quite fast. Just to give you an idea, something we do in the report is to gather data from 6 economies in the region, from their central banks, where the data was compatible around the same amount, period of time. What we find is that relative to 2019, on average, the number of electronic transactions tripled by 2023. Now, I would be, you know, super happy if this was because our economies tripled in size during that time, but that, of course, didn't happen. So how do we read these numbers? We read them as a massive way and substantial way in which the way we transact in Latin America has changed.
And is this because people were forced to do it? The government told them to do it in some way? Or is this just a huge change in preferences? People chosen to do this?
I think it's the latter. This change coincides with a change in perceptions about digital payments. And this is not a minor thing. Like, remember that Latin America has a history of financial disasters, particularly in the 80s. So,
yeah, unfortunately, yes.
So you know, seeing this, the shift in preferences and support for digital payments, it's super interesting and encouraging, and to some extent surprising. Just to give you some numbers, we partnered with the Latino Barometro Corporation to run surveys about perceptions about digital payments in 17 countries in Latin America and the Caribbean. And in 16 of the 17 countries, at least 50% of people say that they prefer digital payments over cash. So that tells us something. There's broad support for this type of tools. Now, why do they like it? Well, many of them say that they are more convenient. Most of them say that they feel safer with that rather than, you know, carrying a bunch of bills in your wallet and in a region that where there is substantial crime. They also like it because they can use it for different things, right? You can use it for person-to-person transfers. You can use it for paying for your purchases as businesses, paying for basic utilities. Governments use them too to disburse cash transfers. So, yeah, people seem to really like it. The private sector is embracing their adoption, and so are governments. So it seems that, you know, this broad conception is reflected beyond just individuals, but in other sectors of the economy.
And for something as universal as this, and for something that's happening in the region, it seems, all at the same time, is it being implemented in the same way everywhere? Is there like a central technology provider, or has it gone on a country-by-country basis?
One of the beauties, I would say, about Latin America is that even though we're in the same region, it's a region that is so diverse. Mm. So diverse in, like, you know, culture, even languages, how we speak Spanish or Portuguese, but also in the approaches that countries take. And this is, I think, what makes Latin America an interesting laboratory for academics to study this, because some countries that have higher state capacity in the financial authority will full on and, like, build and develop their payment infrastructure and then regulate them. And that's fine, but it doesn't have to be that way all the time. Other countries, maybe they have, like, a strong relationship between the governments and the private sector. It's the private sector that develops the fast retail payment systems or the underlying infrastructure needed for payments, and then the government regulates. And that, you know, I think is crucial because it opens the way to think about how these different policies, how these different ways of doing things can lead to different impacts, or maybe not. And I think that is a really, really important and a key feature of this transformation.
Yes, and we're going to talk a little bit about those impacts in a second, but there's one thing I wanted to ask you about this. I live in London, and a big change to digital payments that happened in London was during COVID, when people did not want to handle cash. Was this transformation accelerated in the same way?
Yeah, I would say yes. So let me give you a little bit of story of where this process starts, to the extent that we have data to document it. So this is a transformation that has been going on silently for a while. For example, if you take the World Bank's FinDex service and you exclude the traditional payment technologies like credit and debit cards, what we find is that for Latin America, 3% of adults were using novel digital modes of payments like digital wallets, mobile money, mobile bank accounts, etc. in 2011. By 2021, this was 40%. This is just a massive take-up of this type of technology. Now, going back to COVID, half of this increase was between 2017 and between 2021. So probably COVID had a lot of things to do with this. It definitely may have pushed people that were a little bit reluctant on using digital payment technologies to stay away from cash, as you said. But in the report, we also show that this trend continues. In one of the chapters, we analyze post-COVID trends. And for example, data from WorldPay for 8 major economies in the region shows that the use of cash for in-person transactions declined from 38% in 2020, this is in the peak of COVID, to 25% in 2024, right? And everything that we see makes us think that this transition is going to continue.
So I want to ask you a little bit about how this massive change in behavior has affected life in Latin America and the Caribbean. First of all, do digital payments help people to manage their finances, or do they make it more difficult?
Let me answer it in two parts. Let's first consider what we know from research in Latin America from several years ago and from research in other regions of the world, particularly in Africa, and what we know from the mobile money literature. So definitely, like having access to a novel savings product or financial account, there's evidence that it helps people save. So that is great, right? From the literature on mobile money, we know that that allows for person-to-person transactions and increases the resilience of the very, very, very poor to economic shocks. And that is also very, very, very important. But there are other novel effects of digital payments that have been unraveled over the last years. Think, for example, of crime. There's this very, very cool paper of our former colleague Patricio Dominguez, now at the Universidad Católica in Chile. And he analyzes a natural experiment in Santiago in the context of bus drivers. So before this natural, in the status quo, bus drivers would be getting money from passengers, and they would have lots of cash, and then there would be victims of robberies, right? But then there was a reform, and bus drivers would no longer accept cash, and you would have to have like a prepaid card. And what that meant is that they wouldn't carry cash, and you know, unsurprisingly, but very importantly, the number of robberies declined in Santiago. So that is, you know, moving a little way from just how we manage our money, but also like real life impacts in other dimensions. But this is not what excites me the most about this. What excites me the most about this transformation is that we are starting to see evidence of how this can spur economic growth. As the digital economy takes a larger share of economic activity, digital payments become the backbone of our economies. Okay? Yes, in Latin America, we're still in the process of development in many countries, but we're getting there, and these both processes are happening at the same time. What this means is that, you know, having a modern digital payment system is going to make transactions more efficient, and this can translate into firm growth. There's this really cool paper funded by IDB from researchers at the University of Minnesota, Universidad Católica in Chile, and INSPER in Brazil, showing that after the rollout of Brazil's fast retail payment system, PIX, firms in ex-ante cash-intensive sectors, where the switch from cash to digital payments was larger, grew substantially, right? So this is telling us that these efficiency gains is also encouraging firms to grow, and this is very important. The second is that this efficiency gain is also important for the government. And we see this in the literature that analyzes the impact of disbursing benefits from social programs into financial accounts. That has shown us that people can save more, that people spend less time going to collect their cash. And that is important. And presumably, there is a saving, this generates savings for the government because it might be cheaper to make that direct deposit rather than mobilizing cash. What we found in my recent experiment in Colombia with my colleague Bridget Hoffman, Camilo Peche from the IDB, and my co-author, Carla Hernandez from Universidad Javeriana in Colombia, is that when we focus on a subset of beneficiaries of social programs that didn't have any financial history, we randomly sent an encouragement through the government, prompting them to enroll in direct deposit into these new novel digital wallets. And what we see is that not only they are getting paid in this more efficient way, but actually the government has less failed payment attempts. What does this mean? Before this encouragement in status quo, people would have to go to a bank to receive a cash wire from the government into that bank. Now, if you don't show up in time, you know, that payment gets reverted, gets sent back to the government, then the government has to send that again to you. And then you spend money because you're making that transaction twice and nobody's picking up. And of course, there's no way you will know when your money is going to be at the bank. Now, with this new technology, you open your cell phone and you don't even need the internet because it works with SIM cards. You can see your balance and see if the money is there and you no longer have to go to the bank. Right? And this is something that will happen and we can see this efficiency gain. And the third lesson that we find also from this experiment is that digital payments can open the door for further integration in the financial system. And we see, for example, that among individuals without a credit history, we find that they are more likely to borrow formally after receiving this encouraging, prompting them to switch to digital modes of payment. So again, those impacts are more like the novel ones that I think we haven't seen before with other financial products. And those are the ones that get me really, really, really excited. But at the same time, because there's so much potential, I feel like that is the important challenge. How do you really make digital payments to be a stepping stone for further financial integration? I'm happy to elaborate more on that.
Absolutely. I really have to explain to people who live in the United States or Europe where a lot of banking is still very traditional. It's quite exciting, actually. The first time that I was in Brazil using PIX, it's so simple to use. It works so well for paying bills. And as you say, doing business with the government that, you know, millions of people do, it works extremely well. There is one thing, though, it's pulling a lot of people into the formal economy if they're doing this, because there is a record of those transactions, which, of course, cash doesn't leave. And traditionally, Latin America and the Caribbean have had very large informal economies. Is this a big change?
The relationship between digital payments and informality is a complicated one, to say the least. But let me start by telling you two things. First, one observation. Note that to have access and to use digital payments, neither individuals nor firms need to be formal. And formal defined in the traditional sense, which you're registered with the tax authority or you are contributing to Social Security. Right? There is nothing that prevents you from getting this account. So, in fact, one of the things that's surprising about Latin America is that with high levels of informality, we're able to pull this transformation off, right? I'm from Bolivia. Informality there is like 80% of the workforce. Like this is huge. And yet, you know, you go to a Mercadito and then you open your bank app and you scan a QR code and you're buying, your vegetables for the day. You go to a tiendita around the corner and then you can buy stuff with that. So it's important to think about informality and digital payments, but I think the punchline is that the relationship doesn't have to be complicated, okay? What digital payments are doing, they're substituting cash for something that we think is better and more efficient, but they are not necessarily formalizing or making formality worse, okay? Now, this relationship is gonna get complicated when there is a perception, founded by individuals about what the government is going to do with that information, with that digital
footprint. Right, yes, absolutely. Right? It's going to track your payments and it's going to send you a tax bill.
Yeah. And then, you know, that relationship gets complicated, right? Like, and we've, you know, we're all users of social media. We're very happy to share information with our friends, photos. If I tell you the government may use that for some, in some way, you probably going to say, maybe I shouldn't post this or not. You know, you start thinking about these things. I mean, the same happens to firms and individuals, right? I think there is an important example in the report from Uruguay that emphasizes this idea with solid evidence. So Uruguay has been trying to promote financial inclusion in many, many ways for the last 10 years. They have a financial inclusion law, different types of policies. One of them was trying to mandate employers to pay salaries through direct deposits into payroll accounts as opposed to cash. An IDB paper written by researchers from Universidad ORT in Uruguay showed that this policy actually, you know, led to high levels of compliance. Employers were paying into bank accounts. People were getting more bank accounts, and they were also using more credit and debit cards to pay for transactions. So from a financial inclusion perspective, this was fantastic, right? But this is Latin America, so nothing is that easy in Latin America, okay? So then a year ago, when I was drafting this report, I came across at a conference with a paper from economists from Universidad de la República, UC Berkeley, and the Federal Reserve Board in the U.S., analyzing this exact same policy, but from a different angle. They were looking at what happened with firms in cash-intensive versus cash-intensive sectors versus sectors that relied less on cash. And the idea was that this policy would affect most the cash-intensive sector. But they found that these firms started disappearing from the records of the tax authorities. And they were not closing. Okay, they just went full-blown informal. Mm-hmm. What they also find is that informal employment increased in these cash-intensive sectors after the policy. It seems that in the case of Uruguay, this policy gave firms two choices, right? You can buy the bullet and you can absorb the costs of making your payroll transparent through financial transactions into financial accounts, or you can leave the formal sector altogether. And the evidence suggests that they did the latter, right? So again, I think like the punchline here is that there is a complicated relationship and a potential trade-off. And this doesn't mean that, you know, government shouldn't try to use digital payments for tax compliance. What it means is that there is a challenge in thinking how we can make this trade-off less relevant. And I think that is an invitation also for academic economists to try to help us think about how this we can make this possible, because this is indeed an important opportunity to increase formalization, for example.
As you say, it's an important opportunity in a lot of dimensions. Who's driving the innovation here, Diego? Is it governments, which can help by mandating adoption and making sure that interoperability works and there are standards? Or is it entrepreneurs who traditionally have been the people who come up with new use cases?
I would say both of them. And perhaps, you know, let me give my answer and at the same time emphasize some key lessons that we learned through the process. I mean, a big chunk of the report is trying to explain intuitively, but also with data, how this revolution in digital payments happened in Latin America. We identify three ingredients, okay? Not that I want to give a recipe. Certainly, if I cook something for you, you should not eat it. But let's start with the first pillar, okay? You need innovation. This is not going to happen if the private sector is not creating products that people can use to connect to payment systems. One thing that Latin America did well is to promote a thriving fintech sector. Just let me give you some statistics from some IDB studies in collaboration with Finovista. In 2017, they found that there were roughly 700 fintechs in the region. I have to tell you that I joined the IDB in 2018, and that was like a huge thing, right? But it became even bigger because in 2023, they did the data collection again, and they found over 3,000 fintechs in the region. That is a substantial increase in this industry. And, you know, this, I was recently at a forum with the fintech industry, and you see how much development's been there, how many cool ideas are there. Now, one thing that is important about this development of the fintech industry is that 20% of these fintechs are offering products related to payments, okay? So that's increasing the supply, is bringing innovation to the supply side. Now, banks and traditional financial institutions also did their part. Most of them offer products that enable individuals to connect to payment systems. Some of them, and chambers of banks, for instance, got together and created systems of their own. So all of this to say that in Latin America, the supply side did their part. So that is one pillar, but this is not enough, right? Innovation by itself is not going to cut it. And it's not going to cut it because there are important market failures and key features of the market for digital payments that require some sort of policy intervention and policy action. Let me emphasize on what is the key feature of the market that gives room for policy. It's the presence of network effects. A payment system is going to be more valuable the more people are engaged in that payment system. And this has very important implications for the supply side and for the demand side. So the second pillar is going to have to do a lot with the supply side and how to tackle the pervasive impacts of this network effect. So imagine that, you know, people are in the private sector is innovating, they are creating all these digital products. But because there are these network effects, they're not competing for more market share. They're competing for the entire market. And this creates a perverse set of incentives because they don't really want to make their transactions compatible with the transactions of the competitor. So what that means is that if you have one, you're connected to one payment system and I'm connected to a different one, there's no way that I'm going to be able to transact with you. And that's quite inefficient. Okay. Now, why doesn't it happen in practice is because, let's say I own one digital wallet company and I want to make my services compatible with yours. Well, you know, my customers are going to be happy. So that's great. But the customers of the competition are also going to be happy. So that's not that fun. And then, you know, the social gains of doing this are higher than the private ones. And we know in economics that leads to underinvestment in this type of thing. So there's room for policy intervention. And here, this is part of the second lesson, right? The policy intervention has to do a lot with encouraging interoperability in fast retail payment systems. Okay? We want to make sure, and governments have to work on making sure that everybody can transact with each other regardless of the provider of the financial account. And this is something that Latin America has done really, really well in the last years. Just to give you some examples, in 17 countries, there are fast retail payment systems that allow transfers to be immediate, secure. You don't need to do it for like $1 million. You can do it for like 1 peso and it will go through super fast. So that's great, but that doesn't guarantee interoperability. What is more important is that on top of the infrastructure, in 11 countries, there are dispositions to promote interoperability. And here, I want to go back to one of my previous comments about how important the heterogeneity in Latin America is, because governments have taken different angles at solving interoperability. There is the case of Brazil, where this financial authority, in this case, the central bank, promoted interoperability and also invested in the development of the infrastructure. But, you know, there is the case of Peru, for instance, right, in which there were two digital wallets that expanded substantially. They were both competing, and then the financial authority in Peru said, well, guys, like, you need to talk to each other. I'm going to help you do so. And that is, you know, more like a private sector-driven type of approach. One thing that we do in the report, we focus on interbank transactions. for Brazil and Peru. And these are the type of transactions that are possible at low cost due to interoperability. And we just compare what happens to this type of transactions after interoperability takes place. And we see in Brazil, you know, that these transactions skyrocket. And we knew that because everybody heard about PIX, but then, you know, we do it in Peru and they also, you know, increase substantially. And these are two very, very, very different approaches. So there is an important lesson there, right? There is not a one-size-fits-all type of approach. And at least in terms of adoption of digital payments, we are seeing similar responses. Now, for researchers and the academic community, one thing that we know from the policy side is that how you do things matters. Okay. Now we're seeing increased adoption of digital payments. We haven't seen yet a lot of evidence showing, you know, what happens to growth, whether what Brazil did matters more or what Peru did matters more. And I think there's a lot of room for further research in that area. So just to recap, that is the second lesson, right? Focus on interoperability and acknowledge that there are different ways. Maybe I can talk about briefly about the third lesson, which is innovation and interoperability may not be enough. We need to solve other frictions that happen on the demand side. And this stems from the idea that many people are not going to use payments if their friends or other businesses that they transact with are not in the payment system. And when that happens, you know, people are going to say, well, I'm going to wait for them to adopt. And once they do it, I'll adopt. And when everybody thinks the same, nobody coordinates, and therefore nobody adopts. And we're stuck in an equilibrium of low adoption. And there's a very, very interesting paper by researchers from Yale and the Central Bank of Costa Rica and the University of Chicago using data from Costa Rica fast retail payment system, Simpe Mobile, showing, you know, that this type of theory predicts sluggish adoption there. Now, how do we solve this? I don't know if you remember, like, several years ago, what this idea of the big push. And the big push was this idea around industrial policy saying that you don't to spur economic growth, you need investments from multiple sectors. And because these investments from one sector energize the other sector, there are externalities and people don't do it. Same idea kind of applies in the context of digital payments. How do you solve that? Well, there might be some shocks that solve these coordination issues and make people invest. At the same time, in the context of digital payments, that would be, there might be some shocks that force people to adopt payments at a scale at the same time altogether. Going back to one of your previous questions, the pandemic may have been one of these big push shocks, right? So it is no surprise that, you know, after the pandemic, digital payments increase. But of course, we can't wait for the next pandemic to take action. And something that Latin America has done really, really well is to encourage, for instance, the modernization of the disbursements of social programs, okay, and move from cash to digital payments. And when you do that, you bring a lot of people into the financial system. And on top of that, you bring the right people, because these were the people that were traditionally marginalized from the financial system. So that would be kind of like the third lesson, okay? Innovation is the first one. Second one is interoperability. And the third one is just not up to the financial authorities to work on this. Other branches of the government can be sources of these big push policies that are very important to solve adoption issues.
Well, these are fascinating changes. It's very exciting when a plan comes together, Diego, and to see the huge change that's happening in Latin America and the Caribbean at the moment. Thank you very much for talking to me about it.
Now, thank you very much, Tim, for having me. A pleasure.
The report is called Beyond Cash, the Digital Payments Revolution in Latin America and the Caribbean. The editor is Diego Vera Cosio. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe. You find us wherever you get your podcasts. All our past episodes, as always, are at voxdev.org, where you find articles about the topics we feature. And if you like what you're hearing, please tell someone else about us. Leave us a review.